The die had been cast. And many Lakota leaders realized that the only course left was to resist militarily. One of those leaders was Sitting Bull of the Hunkpapa Lakota. In spring of 1876, he sent messengers to other leaders and called for a gathering in the summer. Fully one-fourth of the Lakota Nation responded, and by the time of the summer solstice, 6,000 to 8,000 were encamped, first near Ash Creek, and then by the Greasy Grass River. That river was also known as the Little Bighorn. There were many battles in the 35-year period from 1855 to 1890. We fought because we had no choice. Some of the battles have long since been forgotten, but a few have caught the world's attention. The Battle of the Little Bighorn in 1876, where the Oglala Lakota Crazy Horse and the Hunkpapa Lakota Gaul, two noted battle leaders, led just over 1,000 fighting men, handed the U.S. Army 7th Cavalry the worst defeat ever suffered by the Army in the West. It is also known as Custer's Last Stand. 8 days prior, Crazy Horse, with a force of 700 to 900 Lakota and Northern Cheyenne, had fought General Crook to a standstill at the Battle of the Rosebud. 10 years earlier, a younger Crazy Horse had been instrumental in a defeat of the soldiers from Fort Phil Kearny at the Battle of the Hundred in Hand, the Fetterman Massacre, according to the history books. Long before the arrival of the whites, my ancestors had developed a concept and a practice of warfare based on a demonstration of courage rather than killing an enemy. It was more honorable and far more courageous, they thought, to touch a live enemy in battle than it was to kill him. Warriors were killed in battle now and then, but killing was not the first and foremost intent. Other tribes had similar philosophies, and sometimes pitched battles were fought in which only a few men were wounded. Whichever side demonstrated more daring, skill, and courage was the victor. This approach to warfare was set aside once the Lakota began in earnest to resist the whites militarily. In our estimation, they didn't understand our sense of honor, but they did understand killing. Several historians and writers have stated that the great warrior Crazy Horse emulated the fighting tactics of the white soldiers because their way was superior. That was not the case. Crazy Horse was the first to point out that the only way to defeat the whites was to kill them, because that was their way. The Battle of the Little Bighorn was a turning point for us. Though we had been the victors in a significant battle, it was as though we had awakened a sleeping giant. The United States government responded to that embarrassing defeat with relentless pursuit, even to the point of attacking in the winter. Soon after the Little Bighorn, a Cheyenne force was caught and defeated at the Battle of Warbonnet Creek in northwestern Nebraska. Later that same year, American Horse's band was defeated at the Battle of Slim Buttes in northwestern South Dakota, and Crazy Horse's camp was attacked, demonstrating that no one was safe from the army. Sitting Bull, meanwhile, fled to Canada, hoping to find sanctuary there, but confusion among some of his younger leaders caused dissension, and he eventually returned in 1881. After a stint with Buffalo Bill's Wild West show, he settled down on a Standing Rock reservation. One other significant factor that determined the course of events from 1876 to 1890, perhaps even more important than the discovery of gold in Black Hills, was the wholesale slaughter of the bison. The once seemingly endless resource, numbering in the millions, was whittled down to a few thousand, no longer adequate to support the free-roaming nomadic lifestyle for several thousand Lakota. General William Tecumseh Sherman, the proponent and a practitioner of complete warfare during the Civil War, applied the same strategy in dealing with the Lakota. Primarily due to his encouragement, hundreds of white buffalo hunters slaughtered bison by the thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, across the plains. Sportsmen were encouraged to come out west and do their part in taming the wild Indians by killing off their lifeline. It was not an uncommon sight for trains to roll through bison country with dozens of rifles shooting out both sides of passenger cars. By 1900, there were probably less than 50 bison south of the 48th parallel, or the border between Canada and the United States. Without the bison, my ancestors lost a literal and figurative source of strength. In May of 1877, Crazy Horse and his followers were the last to surrender to the inevitable by turning themselves over to U.S. authority at Fort Robinson, Nebraska. Crazy Horse had been promised his own agency or reservation, where his people could learn to adjust to their new way of life. The Army, however, was leery, suspicious that Crazy Horse would lead an uprising and renew hostilities. Unfortunately, jealousy among his own kind fomented rumors believed by the Army commanders that led to his untimely death. When informed by a Crazy Horse detractor that he was at the head of a plot to kill General Crook, the commanding officer at Fort Robinson issued orders for his arrest and incarceration. On September 5, 1877, while resisting arrest, Crazy Horse was stabbed by a soldier with a bayonet. He died shortly after midnight, and with him died, for all intents and purposes, the will to resist. The final chapter of Lakota resistance was the Ghost Dance. After the death of Crazy Horse, the Lakota gave in to reservation life. A series of agreements with the United States continued to slice up the Great Sioux Reservation little by little, eventually resulting in several smaller reservations amounting to a small fraction of the original land base. The environmental, spatial, and psychological adjustments for that first generation of Lakota were traumatic. Guns and many of their horses were taken away, and they were expected to learn how to farm. Missionaries waded in, realizing that a defeated people were ripe for conversion. In 1887, the United States Congress passed the Dawes, or Homestead Act, which only served to further reduce Indian land holdings. That act ended treaty making with all Indian tribes and introduced individual land ownership to Indians. A census was taken, and the reservation lands were surveyed. Then land was allocated to males 18 years of age and older. Those with families were given 160 acres, and single men 80 acres. Thereafter, the leftover surplus lands were opened up for homesteading by whites. It was as if the Great Sioux Reservation never really existed. In 1888, a Paiute Indian from Nevada had a vision during an eclipse of the sun and began to preach the Ghost Dance religion. The earth would be returned to the condition it was in before the coming of the whites if all Indians learned to live together harmoniously and shun the ways of the whites, he said. They also had to pray and meditate and perform a dance in which they would briefly die and then glimpse the life to come, complete with bison and their dead ancestors. This message of hope took hold among the Lakota, and some went to the Southwest to learn more about it. The message of hope was given a new twist among the Lakota. The performance of the Ghost Dance will eliminate the whites. Ghost Dance shirts were made, and many people believe they had the power to stop bullets. After the Ghost Dance caught on with a fervor, the nervous federal government sent troops in among the Cichangu and Oglala, fearing that a military uprising was in the making. Perhaps the Ghost Dance would have phased out over time, but the presence of troops only fueled the embers of resistance still smoldering in many Lakota. The Indian agent on Standing Rock was especially nervous that Sitting Bull would join the movement, and on December 15, 1890, he sent a detachment of Indian police to prevent the still influential leader from becoming involved. Sitting Bull resisted arrest, however, and he and seven of his men, including one of his sons, were killed. Meanwhile, Bigfoot's Minikanju Lakota band of 350, mostly women and children, living along the Cheyenne River in north-central South Dakota, had fled southward, having been invited to the Pine Ridge Reservation by Red Cloud and other reservation leaders who were hoping to help restore calm to the situation. The United States 7th Cavalry, the same unit that had been so shamefully defeated at the Little Bighorn 14 years earlier, caught them 30 miles east of the Pine Ridge Agency on December 28th. Along with the 7th was the 9th Cavalry, the famed Negro unit known as the Buffalo Soldiers. They escorted Bigfoot and his column to Wounded Knee Creek and ordered them to encamp for the night. That night and the next morning, soldiers searched for weapons and found only broken and inoperable pistols and rifles. On the morning of December 29th, another search was ordered, during which a scuffle occurred and a shot was fired. The nearly 500 soldiers surrounding the camp opened fire. Hotchkiss guns, rapid-fire state-of-the-art light artillery of the day, were brought into line. When the firing finally stopped, about 200 Mnikanju, including Bigfoot, were dead. So ended the Ghost Dance movement and the whole era that white historians call the Indian Wars.